Hello and welcome to our podcast, where we journey into the depths of newly declassified material, hidden intelligence maneuvers, and the global intrigue that shaped Cold War history. Today, we'll be examining a treasure trove of documents released on March 18, 2025. These records paint a vivid picture of clandestine operations, intelligence gathering missions, cover stories, and the complex interplay of international politics during one of the most turbulent eras in modern history. In this special episode, we'll traverse multiple documents, each unveiling its own piece of the puzzle behind the JFK assassination investigation, covert CIA activities, and the broader espionage landscape that spanned continents. Let's begin by exploring the first set of documents. Segment 1. Our journey starts with three intriguing files. 1104-101-20-10297.pdf. This document provides a reference number, details about a requester, and a subject involved in an operation. It underscores the secretive nature of intelligence work, hinting at a compartmentalized system where only those with proper clearance have access. 2104-10162-10108.pdf. Here we find a receipt for authentication materials received in September 1961. These materials were to be returned when the operation concluded, reflecting the tight controls and procedures designed to safeguard classified information. 3104-10186-10021.pdf. This file highlights a plan to recruit an individual named Genin in San Salvador for a joint operation against a group called PCES. It encapsulates the complexities of Cold War espionage and the ever-present risks faced by field operatives. Segment 2, 104-1016-2-10120.pdf. This document discusses a request made by an individual in Miami, Florida, related to President Kennedy's assassination. While primarily administrative, it includes personal information and interests, potentially linking the requester to the events surrounding Kennedy's death. 104-10009-10021.pdf, a worldwide roster of divisions and operations bases. This file reveals a network spanning Johannesburg, Lagos, and Sao Paulo, complete with specific coded identifiers. These codes illustrate just how extensive and possibly well-funded international intelligence efforts were at the time. 104-10076-10416.pdbf. Another release under the JFK Assassination Records Act, this file comes with a warning against reproduction. It introduces an organization known as AMUG1, reportedly involved in recruitment processes, leaving us to question their ultimate role in the unfolding historical drama. If you would like to learn more about how to, you can incorporate AI administrative assistants who sift through records and generate reports without rest or stress on your own private, local, and secure network. Visit us at imperiumapp.ai or contact us at contact@imperiumjob.com. Segment 3. Let's journey back to the early 1960s. In one podcast segment, we explore Soviet merchant vessels delivering war material, general cargo, cattle, potatoes, petroleum, and crude oil to Cuban ports in 1962. Some of these messages are scarcely legible, adding an aura of mystery. We also encounter Juan Treep and General Thomas O. Hardin. A 1955 memorandum references these key figures, clarifying their involvement in a certain conversation. A classified communication describing the failure of a program to recruit Cuban technicians, shining a light on fragile alliances and the difficulties of Cold War tactics. Another document reveals the intricate dance of agent recruitment and infiltration. 1. Challenges in recruiting and inserting agents into Cuba. Bureaucratic incompetence and infiltration fears impede success, prompting a pivot to more reliable candidates and stressing the importance of local approval. 2. Conversation with Frank Freiberg. This addresses Lee Harvey Oswald's 1959 stay in Finland and subsequent contact with the Soviet consulate. Travel times, consulate hours, and passenger list retention all come under scrutiny, prompting a cable to the Helsinki station for more details. 3. Cover story for Amir/1, a CIA-created consultant position at Roberts Electronic and Engineering Services in the southeastern United States, reveals the elaborate subterfuge used by intelligence agencies. Segment 4. More Records Act insights and complex Cold War maneuvers. Moving forward, we hit upon another trio of documents. 1. A cover arrangement. This outlines employment, payment methods, and tax filing requirements for an undisclosed individual. Once the operation concludes, the cover is discontinued. 2. The National Records Act of 1992, mention of military cover backstop operating components, showcases how covert military affiliations remained masked, complete with specific notification requirements for certain establishments. 3. Insights on the release of JFK-related documents. This text describes potential assets in Mexico City, including Arturo Carrillo Esparza, a graduate student sourcing films for a cine club tied to Soviet groups, and his U.S. national girlfriend, Cynthia Klebicki. Another set of document summaries plunges us into the domain of Cuban exiles and the Cuban army. We see fleeting mentions of a possible defection in New York, detailed interactions involving the Cuban army, and an FBI memorandum regarding Mark Lane, reflective of a period rife with suspicion and intelligence sharing. Segment 5. Peering behind the layers of secrecy. 1-04-1 01-2-1-1-0-0-2-1.p DF suggests that records were released but remains vague on specifics. 104-1017-0-10091.pdf, a seemingly random combination of letters and numbers. 104-10175-10101.pdf, a classified message referencing individuals in Mexico City, such as L1 and Mario Vonteforte Toledo. Their contacts might have impacted exile activities and potential communist ties. 104-1018-3-10239.pdf centers on a business trip to Europe, featuring stops at unspecified destinations, hinting at a labyrinth of hidden connections. We further encounter an era marked by intense surveillance. Reports from Paris to Rome, Geneva to Corpus Christi. Mysterious cargo deliveries. Watchers tailing Chinese delegates at conferences in Havana and Mexico City. Documents from 1964, marked secret, shining a light on cautionary measures in a time when global tensions ran high. Segment 6. Cuban Youth Sabotage and Investigation Shifts. Host. In yet another series of documents, we encounter reports of Cuban youth planning sabotage, plus references to newly released John F. Kennedy assassination files and a global station list with corresponding chiefs. Memos about aliases, covert approvals with U.S. officials, and safe house rentals, notably one in Maryland, leased by Mr. Roger McKay for Mr. V. Rodriguez. Discussion of potential informants, referencing names like Barney Hidalgo as a case officer. Another cluster reveals covert operations in Vietnam, including a 1963 coup plot against the Ngo Dinh Diem family, and a 1964 memo on improving the 7.62 Belgium FAL rifle, addressing open rear sight hoods, underloaded ammunition, and scope challenges. The FBI enters the picture again, investigating Ismail, last name, for suspected ties to a drug trafficking network. Segment 7. CIA Operations, Cover Stories and Intricate Networks. One highlight is the story of Rodriguez, a comptroller of an airline in New York City, functioning as a courier for sensitive materials, with both the FBI and Nationalities Intelligence Section involved. We also discover memos referencing Richard Helms, CIA Director, and Charles CF, Australian Secret Intelligence Organization, discussing Warren Commission document declassification. Henry P. Lopez, traveling from Mexico City to New York, potentially crossing paths with Wusseline. Cancellations of military cover backstops, further underscoring the ephemeral nature of these secret identities. We see a recurring pattern: cryptic instructions, code names, and tight protocol for record handling. Some documents warn explicitly against unauthorized reproductions, referencing AMQUAR1 and Luis Cabas Campa on a Cuban ship. Another references a dummy device assigned a particular code, tying into the swirling world of covert ops. Segment 8. Mysterious activities in Moscow, cargo missions and hidden communications. Several files detail journalists, Aline Mosby and Priscilla Johnson, active in Moscow in the early 1960s, examining potential intersections with intelligence. Another reveals infiltration plans involving specific cargo and four operatives. 1. 104-10098-10072.pdf discloses the surprising fact that an individual deemed terminated was still active in a national security project in 1960. 2. 104-10269-10079.pdf from Rio de Janeiro regarding Cuban Vice Minister of Foreign Affairs Carlos Olivares, who intended to visit Mexico to champion the truth of the Cuban Revolution. 3.04-10098-10264.pdf provides classification info, indexing requests, and begs for operational approval under the Assassination Records Act. Segment 9. Additional JFK assassination files and cryptic entries. Host, continuing through the labyrinth. 104-10113-10181, 104-10308-10269, and 104-10073-10133. One references mandatory document releases in 2025. Another appears as a jumbled mix of letters and words, and the last describes a former Joe at Marty International of Rebel Army employee tied to Kennedy's assassination. 104-10068-10172 suggests an unnamed, second regional, dark influence. 104-10528-10056 involves a coded reference for a dummy device. 104-10217-10228 touches upon an intricate web of names and agencies exploring Kennedy's assassination. 104-10100-10086 documents individuals traveling to undisclosed locations for operational debriefings. Another set references Mexico City's covert ops and a contact named Articona seeking miniature cameras, indicating possible espionage tasks linked to QBARC. Meanwhile, coded missives and ciphers reflect just how layered these clandestine efforts were. Segment 10. Shifting focus. Robert Pratchett, and additional CIA stations. Some files address potential sabotage of well-laid plans. They mention Robert Pratchett, a U.S. citizen entangled in Cuban affairs and aligned with anti-Castro groups. The question arises, where do his loyalties truly lie? Other documents revolve around Angela Prince Mutsos, traveling to Havana to rejoin her husband, prompting FBI requests for CIA intelligence. A chain of transmissions about agent dispatch from blank documents for an operation in Havana to the scramble for accommodation addresses in Mexico. Additionally, we see distribution of anti-communist material through organizations like the Information Council of the Americas INCO and references to Edward Scannell Butler, their executive vice president who championed Truth Tapes programming. Segment 11, Travel, Hotels, and Recruitment in Cuba. Digging further, we come across references to the Hotel Mactimol in Havana and the necessity of proper identification for Americans traveling abroad. A memo urging a shift away from generating new leads to focusing on existing candidate recruitment. Performance reports, including one from Mr. Grayston L. Lynch, covering duties from April 1970 to March 1971. Another cluster of documents details specialized tasks like infiltration craft crew training, special ops, and paramilitary operations in regions like Vietnam. The text repeatedly highlights bureaucratic snags, fear of double agents, and the difficulties in forging trust with local allies. Segment 12, Intelligence Officer Evaluations and Their Roles. We encounter multiple fitness reports for intelligence officers, praising infiltration tactics, anti-guerrilla expertise, and commanding indigenous commando groups. Notable names surface. Grayston L. Lynch, skilled in infiltration, yet requiring more training in certain administrative tasks. Irving C. Devuno, praised for leadership and intelligence gathering, although limited by certain medical or logistical constraints. Their stories underscore the complexities of intelligence careers, blending paramilitary tasks with labyrinthine administrative details like tax issues, contract terminations, or potential awarding of intelligence stars for valor. Segment 13, CIA Personnel Actions, Benefits, and Retirement. From these documents, we gain insights into the internal workings of the CIA, with mentions of retirement, disability benefits, and involuntary terminations for individuals like Lynch, Grayston Leroy, and Irving C. Divuono. Outplacement requests, references to the CIA retirement and disability system, and caretaker roles for overseas operations. Performance memos illustrating tight bureaucratic processes for promotions, salary adjustments, reassignments, and official cover statuses. We see subtle reminders of the mental and physical toll on such officers. Some require medical evaluations or six-month interim assignments pending clearance. Others navigate complications arising from air travel restrictions and personal property loss. Segment 14, Grayston L. Lynch and Contractual Nuances. The documents dedicate extensive attention to Mr. Grayston L. Lynch. Discussions on domestic versus overseas service, the equivalency of stateside duties to foreign tours, and the precise terms of contract agreements. Salary negotiations, bonus structures, especially involving clandestine maritime activities, and detailed references to retirement, annuities, or disability concerns. Legal intricacies also appear, as in the case of tax liabilities for Irving G. Divuono and the requirement to file amended returns. We see how even the most secretive careers intersect with everyday bureaucratic checks and balances. Segment 15, Records, Station Chiefs and Performance Reviews. More memoranda emphasize records management and the importance of the registry. For instance, James S. Woods, recognized as Chief of the CCS Registry, the Tokyo Station Registry, or the Mexico City Station's intelligence analyst in various documents. Performance reviews consistently praise employees for diligence in reorganization, micrographics, supervisory counseling, or writing seminars. In some cases, employees receive outstanding ratings, along with quality step increases or promotions to GS10, reflecting the system's reward for exemplary service, even in a clandestine environment. Meticulous references to wage scales, official forms, travel agreements, and job classifications reveal the day-to-day operational backbone of intelligence organizations. Segment 16, Training, Language Proficiency, and Broader Implications. We also find detailed forms capturing language skills, travel availability, prior military service, special clearances, and professional memberships. Overseas service contracts requiring staff to remain abroad for set durations, with protocols for reimbursement if tours end prematurely. Thorough records on indexing criteria, official files systems, and micrographics workshops, emphasizing the CIA's reliance on well-managed data. These arcs remind us how intelligence isn't solely about espionage drama. It's also about the constant administrative upkeep, ensuring every operation, agent, and piece of evidence is properly documented. Segment 17, The Wider Web, From Total Secret Messages to Ambity One. Our final cluster of introductions unveils references to phone conversations, security concerns, and persons like Ambity One, Mr. Archer, and Adelaide. They plan or discuss operations in places ranging from Miami, Nicaragua, and Congo to Venezuela, highlighting potential expansions or changes in base locales. A pilot offered work in the Congo. Tensions about finances, contraband, and controlling the organization known as AM World, fraught with accusations of dictatorship, blackmail, and operational infiltration. We also see references to Manuel Artemé Buesa as a pivotal figure in resisting Castro, interactions with Adelaida Padrón, and details on sabotage or guerrilla training. The storyline culminates in talk of precarious alliances and the precarious line between revolution and infiltration. Conclusion, reflections and lingering questions. Host, thoughtful tone. We've traversed a dizzying array of newly declassified files, each shining a flashlight on the hidden corners of mid-20th century espionage, covert warfare, and the labyrinth of relationships entwined with the JFK assassination. From incomplete infiltration plans in Cuba and conspiracies in South Vietnam, to meticulous record-keeping in Rome, Tokyo, and Mexico City, these documents reveal the depth of intelligence operations spanning the globe. We've seen personal stories, like those of Grayston L. Lynch and Irving C. Divuono, threaded through the fabric of CIA strategy, contending with medical or financial constraints, yet persevering in highly specialized roles. We've glimpsed interagency friction, references to codenames like AMBIDDY1, and efforts to unify Cuban exiles for potential uprisings against Fidel Castro's regime. And we've uncovered countless memoranda carefully enumerating the everyday realities of intelligence life, promotions, addresses, safe houses, and sometimes bungled bureaucracy. Most of all, these documents reaffirm that the Kennedy assassination didn't occur in a vacuum. It was enveloped by the political, military, and psychological struggles of an era shaped by the Cold War. Even as we piece together the puzzle, new layers of secrecy, redactions, and reams of cryptic references keep us grappling with ultimate truths. Host, closing statement. Thank you for joining us on this comprehensive exploration of documents released under the President John F. Kennedy Assassination Records Act of 1992. We hope this episode has broadened your perspective on the hidden maneuvers, the global intelligence chessboard, and the remarkable individuals entangled in the saga. Stay tuned for further episodes as we continue to unravel the threads of history, shining a light into the darkest archives and revealing stories once sealed behind classified stamps. If you would like to learn more about how to, you can incorporate AI administrative assistants who sift through records and generate reports without rest or stress on your own private, local, and secure network. Visit us at imperiumapp.ai or contact us at contact@imperiumjob.com. Until next time, I'm your host, signing off. Stay curious, stay informed, and remember, sometimes the truth is found in the fine print.